better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. What is up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle and Jordan. How you doing? Hope you've had a nice weekend. You know, there's a way to tell that it is the last Sunday in January because here in the studio we have members of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. It's the third year in a row, I think. Mm-hmm. We also have with us Annie Vercelli. She brought with her David Barber, who is vice president of the association, and Carl Brandhorst, president of the association. Welcome back.
Thank you, Michelle. It's a pleasure to be back.
This is really getting to be a lovely tradition here on Mouthful.
Glad you enjoy. We enjoy bringing some wines out to you. And,
well, right. I really am pleased that you like coming back. Mm-hmm. Also, you are on Steve Gardner's show on Saturday.
We
heard you
yes,
talking
we were.
About that. Listened to you for as long as I could and then had to get out of the car and get to the farmer's market mm-hmm. before it ended. Steve was one of my mentors. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I'm looking at what we're going to taste here today. And I think last time we tasted whites.
Yes.
Yes, we did.
And I think I might have said then, let's do rosé next time.
That's what correct. You said, and that's what we have today.
So we have six rosés, and looking down, if you even covered up where these wines were from, looking down the alcohol level, wow, you'd say this is probably not a group of California wines. I mean, just look at this, 11.5, 12, 12, 12, 12. The highest is 13%. So that's something that we will be talking about a little bit later in the show. I'm very interested in alcohol levels, partly because they have risen so dramatically here in California.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think it's problematic in a few ways, and I think it's also really illustrates something happening with the climate.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. And that's one of the things we in the East, our climate is not as hot and intense as here in California. Mm-hmm. This past year, we had a very warm season. We had a lot of rain in the spring, of course, a lot of snow in the winter, and a lot of rain in the spring, and a very dry, hot season mm-hmm. through the growing season. And every harvest was about 2-3 weeks early.
Oh, your harvest was two or three.
Early this
and
year.
Our harvest was
yes.
quite a bit late.
Well, we had
a very cool summer.
We had what a lot of the winemakers were calling a California summer, where you all, I think, had a growing season was more like the East. Yeah. So we switched off this year.
Yeah, July was foggy and cold almost the entire month.
Mm-hmm. So consequently, some of our winemakers are having problems getting higher sugars in their wine because we don't know what to do with the higher sugars to give the higher alcohol and fermentation. Uh-huh. But you're just the opposite out here.
Yeah. So let's first do an overview. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic Seaboard Wine, that includes any state that touches on the Atlantic. Is that right?
That's correct, including Vermont, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, which don't touch the Atlantic but are close enough to be considered as part of the Atlantic Seaboard.
For contiguous reasons, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that seems fitting for them to be there. And there are wineries In every state.
Each of the 50 states have at least two wineries. Mm-hmm. We in the Atlantic Seaboard have a good concentration of them. Mm-hmm. Not as many as California, of course, but we still
have wineries. No, but a surprising number. For people mm-hmm. who are still really California-centric, mm-hmm. I think the numbers of how many wineries yes. there are on the East Coast surprises people.
In New York, you have over 400, and in Pennsylvania, about 120.
Now, over 400 in New York surprises me. Right. I'm always surprised when I hear that number.
Well, New York is the fourth largest wine-producing uh-huh. state in the Union, and prior to the expansion in Washington State and Oregon, they were number two.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been making wine for many years because the whole U.S. was settled by the British coming over and the Italians mm-hmm. on the East Coast, of course, was the first stop.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought their tradition and history and looking for grapes. After all, the British were thirsty.
Sure.
The colonists.
It makes total sense.
And they heard about Leif Erikson saying Vineland, so they went, go forth and conquer and send wine back.
Now, where are the concentration of wineries in New York?
Finger Lakes region, Long Island, the Hudson Valley. Those are the three principal areas. Uh-huh.
Now, Finger Lakes, I don't know much about their wines at all.
It's a cooler climate mm-hmm. because it's in the center, and you have the lakes giving you that water effect to moderate the climate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of a Germanic style, a lot of Rieslings, a lot of Gewurztraminers, mm-hmm. but also some Pinot Noirs because they were planted for the sparkling wine industry,
uh-huh.
which sort of panned out a little bit. So they have a lot of Pinot Noir. Not going to be as ripened, but we have one of our first wines is a Pinot Noir Rosé.
Great. Now, yesterday on Steve Gardner's show, you tasted, if I have this correct, you tasted a wine that is either a cross of something and a Gewurztraminer.
Yes, a Traminet.
A Traminet, yes.
It's a hybrid. Yeah. Traminet, a lot of the developing of wines, especially back to the colonists, mm-hmm. were trying to figure out what grapes would grow best, and they tried the vinifera. Of course, they didn't know phylloxera at the time, but mm-hmm. that's where phylloxera originated in the East. So the vinifera they grew, as we know, didn't make it too well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some natural pollination, some natural crossbreeding, and then, of course, in the early 1900s, late 1800s, with phylloxera, the French were interested in developing stronger, hardier bodies wines. The Native American grapes were resistant to phylloxera, the roots, but they weren't the flavors. That's the Concord and other style of that, which were more jelly and jam wine mm-hmm. or grapes. But the French were looking for hardier grapes, so they started crossbreeding. And they did some of that work in France. They did some in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you have the sexual reproduction of a vine, taking a parent of one and a parent of another and crossbreeding with a seed and then coming up with a different one. So there's a lot of hybridization going on.
Mm-hmm.
Hybridization is when you're doing that sexual reproduction from one species, Vitis labrusca, to another species, Vitis vinifera.
Vitis labrusca.
Mm-hmm. North American continent is indigenous, has more indigenous grape species than any other continent. We have the Vitis vinifera that we're all aware of, but that's mm-hmm. not indigenous to the U.S., that's Europe,
mm-hmm.
where Vitis labrusca is the more foxy grapes, the Concord, the Niagara. That's from Pennsylvania north. Vitis mm-hmm. rotundifolia is another grape. That's the scuppernong and muscadine, which is mm-hmm. more indigenous to North Carolina and South, and mm-hmm. even Alabama and Missouri, Mississippi. And then Vitis estivalis, which is another grape, which the Norton grape is Vitis estivalis, mm-hmm. which is a Native American grape.
Uh-huh.
And Vitis riparia, very typical of in the East, but that doesn't produce many grapes, but that is a very vigorous grape used basically for rootstock or uh-huh. hybridization. And they're just a few of the species in Native America, uh-huh. indigenous in North America.
Amazing. Amazing. Before we start tasting, mm-hmm. what does Florida do? What does Florida produce?
Florida, typically, since it's farther south, uh-huh. they have a lot of fruits. They do make fruit wines, a lot of citrus wines. But also, the University of Florida has developed quite a few varieties, some hybrids that are more indigenous. They'll do well with the climate there.
Mm-hmm.
They've developed Suwannee, which is a grape. University of Florida developed Suwannee, which is a cross between muscadine and I forget exactly what else. And there's another variety too, Clos de Bois. Clos de Bois, that's a California one. But Blanc de Bois is another grape that they've uh-huh. developed to grow in Florida and make a nice wine, a palatable uh-huh. wine that we're used to as opposed to the fruit wines.
Yes.
A lot of that grows in Texas too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what should we try first?
Well, our first one is going to be Glenora, a Pinot Noir. And as I said, this is from New York, the Finger Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is made from Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir was grown, you had a lot of the sparkling wines in the Finger Lake area.
Mm-hmm.
And they started planting volumes of Pinot Noir, which don't ripen that well because it's a little cooler and a shorter growing season. And then the sparkling demand went away. So they had these grapes. They started making some nice quaffable red Pinots and varietal Pinots. But then they also started making some rosés.
Uh-huh.
The winemaker up there is Steve DeFrancesco, and he is he's been submitted to our competition many times, and they make some very nice wines.
Now tell us about your while you're pouring, and get it right up there by the mic. It sounds so good. Yes, one of Mouthful's favorite sounds. So tell us about the competition.
The Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association Wine Competition, Michelle, is in its we're going into our seventh year now, and it covers the wine, Native American hybrids, and the regular Vitis vinifera from the 17 states from Maine down to Florida. And by California standards, it's a little small competition. We just have 558 our last number of entries, but 110 wineries. And so we're growing a little bit each year, and I think we're getting recognition that there are quality wines being produced on the East Coast. And we do, just to show the broad nature of Californians, the Wine Caucus, which was initiated by Mike Thompson and George Radonovich back in 1999, I believe, allows us to sponsor a room on Capitol Hill where we have the congressmen from the winning districts of the winemakers give their awards to the winemakers.
Oh, really? Oh, how nice.
It's a win-win situation for congressmen because of the non-contentious situation.
Uh-huh.
So that's one reason we're trying to highlight it.
This is a lovely rosé. Now, I know that there's another tradition that I couldn't join in this year. You have a very nice lunch at Annie Vercelli's house this afternoon, and the menu just sounds delightful. Is this, by any chance, one of the ones you might have served?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
We'd like to have variety of wines in all the venues we're doing. Annie is our West Coast representative of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association and is very instrumental in making all these arrangements and appointments for us. And since she is such a marvelous cook, she always has a luncheon for us.
Yes.
And we had 14 different wines, but we did not have any rosés today.
Okay,
we
were
going to do them
rosés
today.
Okay, well, Annie, could I talk you into telling us what you think of this wine or describing it, maybe?
I think it's a real vibrant salmon color, very, very brilliant. Strawberries on the nose. Real noticeable acidity, bright, alive, good alone, and a very good quaffable wine, and good with food, a very good food wine.
Yeah. I really love the acidity.
Yes.
It's really
yes.
bright, really, really, has those very high, really high, pretty notes.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I would definitely drink this wine any old time, and this one is...
It's Glenora Winery.
Glenora.
It's made from
Glenora. It's 11.5%.
Mm-hmm.
What a find. And this would retail for $13.99. Now, what's the availability of something like this on the West Coast?
Probably not too much.
Okay.
Glenora is a relatively large winery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly their shipping availability, but they may be able to do that. But in regular distribution in stores, most of the wines in the East Coast are sold in the East Coast at the winery.
Yeah.
And not too much further. There's a lot of boutique-style wineries. As I say, Glenora is a relatively large one, so you may find more around in the East.
Well, this is a really, really lovely wine. Now, what is the next one that we're going to try?
The next one's going to be my wine, but it's Heartwood Winery.
It breaks my heart to dump
I know.
This one.
Okay. It's a small – we're a small winery in Fredericksburg, Virginia, which is between – Washington, D.C., and Richmond. So it's 50 miles south of Washington, D.C. We're 21 years old, and this is from a French hybrid grape, Chambersin. Chambersin was developed in the Loire Valley in France, hybridized there. So we don't know the parentage of it, but probably since it's Loire, may have some Cabernet Franc embedded in it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, 95% Chambersin, and just a nice, easy wine. We like to say this is nice with it's aperitif style wine or dining al fresco in the summertime. It's just a nice, enjoyable wine. We started making this in vintage 2000, and a lot of your rosés were the blush style, the marketing term, a little sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of an accident. We had made this. We had all of our Chambersin coming in, which will make a red wine, a Beaujolais style wine, and I had all the vats filled with the must for the fermentation, and I'm cleaning up the crusher destemmer, and my business partner is driving a tractor up full of grapes.
Oh,
and
no.
I said, I don't have any more room. And he said, you better find room. So I said, is the press clean? He said, yes. Okay, we're pressing.
Oh.
And the original thought was to make a sweeter style blush, which was still fashionable in 2000. but it fermented completely dry before we could stop it. We tasted it. We liked it. We said, if no one else likes it, we'll drink it. And everyone else liked it. We bottled it that way. And the following year, we had to make twice as much because it sold out.
Really? This is very, very different than the first one we tasted.
Chamberson will give you some raspberry and cherry-like flavors. And this one, I think, really gives you a lot of nice cherry flavors coming through in the wine.
It's got a lot going on in the mid-palate. What do you think of this, Annie?
I think it's real full of flavor and has a real long-lasting flavor. Mm-hmm. Real good food wine.
Mm-hmm. Really good food wine, but really interesting in the way it just fills the mid-palate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I like it. Again, it's very very food-friendly, not fat, refreshing, very refreshing on the palate. Some
ham salad is marvelous. Anything with ham or prosciutto around asparagus tips and lightly broiled.
Oh, that sounds good. It's got some either dried... I would say dry, almost dried raspberry and dried cherry, or not quite ripe cherry, which is, there's no perception, no suggestion of sweetness at all, which is, I mean,
Well under 1% sweetness.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's again, very refreshing. I can imagine this one being, I mean, and I love these wines, even though we tend to think about them more in the summer, summer coiffures. I really like these wines in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I find somehow mirroring that, like wines that are sort of like fog.
Yes.
You know, I find them very pleasing in the winter.
Well, they're nice as an aperitif style wine. Winter is usually
nice
when
way
you
to
have,
start off the meal.
Mm-hmm.
Usually have a larger meal, a multi-course meal. Start off with a nice rosé with your past hors d'oeuvres or something like that. Then get into some bigger wines. But there's still a place for rosés throughout the year.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This is lovely. And about how many cases are you making now?
We at Heartwood, we do about 1,500 cases a year.
1,500.
We do about 300 of the rosé.
Uh-huh. And you're located?
In Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Fredericksburg, okay. Mm-hmm. Nice historic place.
It was the Revolutionary War, Civil War. It was on both sides of the Civil War. In fact, our winery is on the estate that was subdivided, but the main house that was there prior to the Civil War actually served as a field hospital for both sides during
really?
The war.
Oh, how interesting. Well, you are listening, of course, to Mouthful. We are talking about Atlantic Seaboard wines. When we come back, we're going to be tasting a wine from Georgia.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia on my mind.
I said, Georgia. Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly, still in the peaceful dreams I see, the road leads back to you. I said, Georgia, oh, Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly, still in peaceful dreams I see the road leads back to you. Whoa. Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia, Georgia.
I say just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
You know, I'm so happy that you were pouring a Georgia wine, because I really wanted to hear that fabulous Ray Charles song. I should reintroduce my guests. We have with us Annie Vercelli, who's the West Coast representative for the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. Is
yes,
that right?
That's
You're
correct.
Also a teacher at Santa Rosa Junior College, culinary department.
We're 30 years now.
Wow. We're colleagues there, though I haven't been since they reduced everything. I've got to get back. I've got to go talk to the department chair. I'm missing teaching. And I said they're really moving along with a new building. So that's going to be really great. We also have with us Carl Brandhorst, president of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, and David Barber, vice president and also proprietor of Heartwood Winery in Fredericksburg, Virginia. There we go. And, oh, there's the card for that. A deer, grape leaves, and grape clusters.
Well, Heartwood is our name. When we opened the winery in 1989, we did not want to use a family name, so we named it after the community of Heartwood, which was named by the British when they first settled there in the 1600s because they found a lot of deer in the woods. Heart is the old English word for deer or stag. So we're Heartwood Winery, and that's our
great.
Logo.
That's great. Okay, so tell us what we're tasting now.
Well, we just finished up with our wine, Heartwood Winery. It's Rappahannock Rose, a dry rosé wine. A little play on words. And it's made predominantly of a Chambersin grape, which is a French hybrid grape, giving you nice cherry-like flavors. It's a nice body. Coming up now, which we're just opening, is going to be a wine from Georgia. Carl?
This is Horse Creek Winery in Georgia. It's in the southern part of the state. Most people think the southern part of the state is just for the muscadine, but I think this belies that. This winery near Nashville, Georgia, just off Interstate 75, is on 40 acres of land. It was founded in 1992 by Ed Perry, and he grows a little bit of muscadine, but he also grows Merlot, a little bit of Cabernet Sauvignon, and a little Torrigo Nacional, which is surprising to find in that part of the world.
Now tell me that one again.
Torrigo Nacional, which is the Portuguese port variety.
Oh, okay.
And we know what's happening in Portugal. In the Douro these days, they're taking that and instead of doing port and making still red wine. So I'm sure that that's what Ed Perry is doing down there. But it's in the southern part of the state, and we're doing their rosé here is off their Merlot.
Yes, I see here on the sheet that you gave me, it says white Merlot. I forget where I was. I was possibly in Minnesota in the Iron Range. I might have been on Kodiak Island. I was somewhere that, shall we say, wasn't real urban. Mm-hmm. And
that's the northern part of Minnesota, yes.
And I ordered, it's like any port in a storm, you're looking at the wine list, and it's like, oh my gosh, what can I drink here? And I ordered a Zinfandel, and it just said Zinfandel. And I got...
Guess what? A blush.
I got white Zinfandel, which was very sweet. Mm-hmm. And I asked the server about it, and he said, oh, it's a different grape. And he went on this whole thing. He told me this whole story about this other Zinfandel, which is actually a white grape. And I was very impressed. He had to have just made it up on the spot. He had no idea what he was talking about.
Well, not to be outdone, there are some wines coming on the East now labeled as red Zinfandels. And they said, oh, they grow a different grape?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Okay, so this is a Merlot Rosé.
Correct.
This is the highest percentage. This is 13% alcohol. Mm-hmm. It sells for $14, retails for $14, Horse Creek Winery in Georgia.
It's in the southern part of the state. A lot of the wine, Georgia makes good wine, and a lot of them are in the northern part of the state, north of Atlanta. So it was really nice to get an entry in our country, in our competition from the southern part of the state that was a non-muscadine, because it shows that you can do
vitamin
effort down there also.
Now, this one does have some sweetness.
I think it's not too much, but just noticeable, a little more body giving you there.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of the wineries will make something that they're obviously not making wine just for themselves. They're making it to sell.
Sure.
It depends upon what their market is what the style of the wine is going to be. A lot of the wineries have a variety, something for everyone. But again, people, even in our tasting room when we do it, I come across, do some whites, and then we get to the pink wine. I'll pick it up, the rosé, and people, I don't do that. Why? Because it's sweet. No, pink is a color. It's not a taste. But again, people see pink. They think
sweet. Yes. I'm going to shift away from wine for just a second, because I know one of the dishes that you had today at Annie's was a sorrel soup. And Annie, I would love for you to tell us about your sorrel soup. We can swap, because I make sorrel soup as well, and I love it.
Oh, I grow sorrel. It grows really well in my backyard. Grows well in the hot summer, in the rain, in the frost.
Now, do you have it in the shade for the summer?
There is some shade there.
Yeah.
Yes. So it grows really well. And so the soup is onion, garlic, chicken stock, potatoes, and sorrel. And I puree it and garnished it with a little fresh nutmeg. And so it went well. With that, we served a petite mansang, and we also served a viognier.
And a petite mansang?
Yes.
Now, that's not familiar to me. What is that?
It's a vinifera. Coming back from southwestern part of France.
Okay.
There's two grapes, a Gros Mansang and a Petit Mansang, because of the size of the grape. Mm-hmm. And I guess Virginia, Jenny McLeod, was one of the first ones at Chrysalis Winery bringing it in and growing it, because I know she petitioned to the TTB, the federal regulations, to have that as a varietal.
Horton, I think, started it off, and I think Jenny brought it on. Yes.
Interesting.
But it can be done as a dry wine, it can be done as a sweeter wine, or anything in between. Mm-hmm. But it's growing. People are starting to understand it, learn it, and enjoying it.
Interesting. Now, your soup is so similar to mine, except I don't use nutmeg. I put lemon zest in.
Oh.
I put lemon zest in. I'll often put a great big dollop of whole milk yogurt, because I like that lemon quality in sorrel. But yours sounds really good, too. Have you ever eaten the leftovers cold?
Oh, yes, chilled. Yeah. It's chilled.
It's
very good chilled.
It's really good.
Yes.
Really, really good chilled. Yeah, if you haven't discovered sorrel, or if you think that you have a black thumb when it comes to gardening, sorrel can change that. It can make you feel like a successful gardener with actually very little effort. And I started growing red sorrel as well. And red sorrel, you know, it's not really red. It's green leaves. They're a little bit smaller than the big all green leaves, but they have red veins. But it still has that really nice lemony flavor. And sometimes they make sorrel soup with just that, or sometimes with a combination of the two, or sometimes just with the big green. But my sorrel anyway is loving the weather the last couple of weeks. So I've got just enough. I cut it back. I've got just about enough to make a big pot of soup this week. So,
with that soup also, we serve two wines. We served a Virginia Viognier.
Okay.
And
that's
Viognier
right.
Really seems to be the white grape of Virginia, from what I understand.
It's growing very, very big, very nice. A lot of wineries do have a Viognier, and very popular. A lot of that perfumey aromatics coming through. Obviously, the Rhone Rangers brought it to California first, but Dennis Horton, one of the Virginia wineries, tasted it in here and brought it back to Virginia.
So is it showing itself similarly to how it does in California? Because, I mean, you say Viognier, and I immediately think all of the perfume, all of those floral
qualities. Honeysuckle aromas,
mango
flavors
aromas
coming through, mangoes.
Yeah.
I think we're a little more intense in some areas in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
Of course, many people are growing it now, and it's growing very rapidly, that you do get a few different stylistics of the wine.
And
aromatic.
We were pouring four wines on Saturday at Traverso's, four
that's
Virginia
right.
wines, and one of them was a Viognier, and we sold out of that wine.
You did? Yeah,
absolutely.
Wow. Those tastings at Traverso's are so great.
Yes. A lot of fun. It just promotes some other wines. And that's interesting. Since we're talking about that, we had an unusual wine, a red, a Tannat varietal. Tannat is, again, indigenous to southwestern part of France in the Cahors area, but growing in Virginia now. And it's people think it's going to be a big, bold red wine, which it is, but with a year or two aging, it mellows out and is a varietal. Uh-huh. You do get that inky color. Years ago, before a lot of the regulations in Bordeaux, they used to sneak the Tannat in to Bordeaux to deepen up the color.
Oh, really? So mm-hmm. It sounds like maybe it has some similar qualities to Alicante Boucher.
On the color side, yes.
It's a little color side.
Even more bold, I believe.
Oh, really?
More tannins in there, too.
More tannins mm-hmm. than Alicante Boucher.
Yes.
Wow. Because I remember the first time that I tried that wine, and I was like, I think it was Michael, I'll think of his last name in a second. We all know him. But, you know, he jokingly said, yeah, what people always say is, you know, you plant one grape to drink and you plant this one to paint your barn.
Yes.
And we mentioned off mic, I had mentioned Coppola and Coppola's, Francis Ford Coppola Winery in mm-hmm. Geyserville, not the one over in Rutherford. Right. But they're now doing about 500 cases of Alicante Boucher a year because Francis remembered his Uncle Mikey mm-hmm. and his father getting grapes shipped from Lodi.
Yeah.
And they would ship Alicante Boucher and Muscat.
Okay.
And they would mm-hmm. make a couple barrels of mm-hmm. each every year.
Yeah.
And, you know, Francis is so motivated by his memory and his past and how, you know, the things from his family. Yeah. So they're now making about 500 cases.
Yeah. I know there's at least one winery, one vineyard growing it, Alicante Boucher in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it's not a very big seller. Hasn't caught on like some of the others are trying.
Okay, so this next one that we're going to try.
Mm-hmm. The next one is Lucas. Come up with Finger Lakes again, and it's a dry rosé, and it is made from a Cabernet Franc.
This winery was founded in 1974 on Lake Cayuga. They've got about 68 acres, and they do about 17,000 cases a year. But they're one of the early ones up there.
Lake Cayuga.
In the Finger Lake region.
It's another Finger Lake.
There are six wineries or six lakes of the Finger Lakes. It's actually a six-fingered hand that dug out from the glaciers coming through. Cayuga is one. The Lake Cayuga, mm-hmm. Seneca, Cayuga, Canandaigua, and I forget the other one. But there's a bunch.
You did
there.
Really well.
I'm from the east.
And this so Cabernet Franc retails for $9.99. It's 12% alcohol.
That's what we also did a lecture at the Sonoma County Wine Library on Friday night.
Yeah, Friday night.
And I did a little history of wine on the East Coast and grapes coming in. And one of the things I did was just a little handout, which I'd found. I had a big map up there, but for people could really see it a little bit more, I had a map there and had the states from the eastern part of the U.S. on there, but no names. And that was another test to see if you could name the states on the east.
Oh, how did people do?
They were working on it, and they kept saying, oh, where's Delaware? Where's Maryland? But it wasn't too bad.
But Delaware is the one you have to get up really close to because it's very tiny.
Second smallest one. But it was fun. I mean, people were going through that. On the West Coast, you're easy. You only have three to worry about what touches the Pacific.
Yes.
We have, you know, 12, you have a lot. 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when you were here a year ago.
You did pretty well.
I did really well. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. I missed one.
Yes. I think it was New Hampshire that you missed because that only touches a little bit.
Okay. But yeah, I'm not going to try it again.
Rest on your laurels.
Exactly. This is another very nice wine.
Again, on the dry side.
On the dry. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, my preference is mm-hmm. all the way on the dry side.
Mm-hmm. But with the rosé, since they're all made from the red grapes, just not fermented on the skins, you get the more structure, more body. You're getting some of that red grape mm-hmm. body coming
Absolutely.
Through.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because if you take a white that has gone through malolactic, and you get that, especially mid-palate, real full fattiness, it's not the same as the body that you get from these rosés. It's an interesting distinction.
And that's the French making champagnes. That's why two of the grapes are red and one is white in a traditional champagne, mm-hmm. the three grapes, the Chardonnay, of course, but Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier mm-hmm. to give you the body in the champagne.
Yeah, this is another wine I would absolutely drink.
And Cabernet Franc, as we talked, I think that is growing very well on the East, especially in Virginia. But this is New York. Cabernet Franc as varietals is doing very mm-hmm. well, and very palatable. Actually, it grows a little better than Cabernet Sauvignon, and becomes a bigger wine. Just because of the weather and the soils.
Because of the weather.
Yeah, you know, I've seen some wine writers state in some of the columns that Virginia has become known for the second destination in the world for Cabernet Franc varietals.
Really?
The first one not being California. It's a Loire Valley in France.
Right. Interesting. Very interesting.
So we'll take those bonuses.
Sure. I think we're going to take a little another musical break here on Mouthful. I really need to sneeze. So wish me luck. We'll be right back.
Your daughter to me. She left me on that corner staring, knocked the wind out of me. Well, down to a dollar now, and that dollar back to a dime. I'm wondering how I've been wasting all that precious time. I just been sitting down here on that railway line, thinking about what used to be mine. Girl, I'm just sitting down here wondering why. Watching days like I was all flying by. I'm just sitting round here with my hat in my hand, wondering how many years it's been singing.
Listening to Mouthful. It's our annual exploration of the Atlantic Seaboard wines. Such a beautiful array of scarlet, vermilion colors today. We are tasting our way through six different rosé wines, all but I think one completely dry, one a little off dry. And what do we have? Let's see. We have next Fabioli Cellars, a Sangiovese.
Correct. Fabioli Cellars is owned by Doug Fabioli. He is a winemaker, obviously, who's worked for a bunch of other wineries and actually opened his own winery out of his garage.
One of those guys.
Yes,
love them.
But he's doing very well, and this is one of his wines. His rosé. He calls it Rosa Luna. And there's the
Rosa Luna. I have to look.
The cat baying at the
moon. What a wonderful label. It's really fairly abstract rendition of a cat. But Rosa Luna. Is there a cat named Rosa Luna there?
I don't know.
I hope there is. Yeah. I really hope there is.
Well, Doug spent 10 years in California in Buena Vista.
Buena Vista. So, okay.
Before coming east in 1997, and he opened his winery, Fabiola, in 2001. It's a very small winery, just about 25 acres. He does a couple thousand cases. And this is Sangiovese grape.
Obviously, with a name like Fabiola, he's doing some Italian varietals.
Yes.
And I think this shows he's done, as I say, working for a couple other wineries and established himself. And he's consulting for some other wineries at this point now, too. Mm-hmm. But he has his own that he's concentrating on.
And it's
Sangiovese.
Sangiovese. Mm-hmm. But where in Virginia?
Again? It's in Northern Virginia.
Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what's interesting about Virginia. People, Virginia being the fifth largest wine producing state in the Union with over 190 wineries, people say, well, where are they? They think in Napa, Sonoma, they're all together. Well, we're not. I always answer, they're in Virginia. We have locations all around. We have some concentrations in Charlottesville with the, sort of the south central and the northern Virginia, but we have wineries in the southeast, southwest corner, all around.
Yeah, and it's really changing in California, too. I mean, we have the Sierra foothills, we have Monterey, we have Santa Barbara area, Temecula. So as tourist destinations, I mean, still, the default destination still is Napa.
Right, right.
Increasingly, people are aware of Sonoma.
Yes. Well, in Virginia, we have five American viticultural areas, AVAs. So that's designated as certain areas, as you know out from California. Pennsylvania has, I believe, two. New York has three or four. New Jersey even has an AVA.
And what are they growing in New Jersey?
Good grapes, making good wine. There's a couple Italian styles, some nice Merlots, the Cabernet Francs, the Chambersin, French hybrids.
If you recall, on our first visit with you, we had Alba Vineyards, which is Milford, New Jersey. They had a Chambersin, which is very good. And Alba Vineyards is the second largest winery in New Jersey. The largest is Tomasella Cellars further south.
Now, who wants to talk about the Sangiovese? Annie, do you want to talk about this?
Yes. I think it, you get strawberries in the nose, but it's definitely very, very dry. Noticeable acid, very, very crisp, very alive, with a really long finish. This you really could have this with an entree, definitely.
Yes.
Real good food wine.
Almost spritzy on the palate, don't you think? Do you think, or is that just, okay, good.
No, it's not very just noticeable. Yeah, very alive.
Yeah, it's like it's dancing on the tip of your tongue.
Yes.
Very, very interesting.
Give me some excitement while you're drinking it.
Yeah. Now, I know Gevero is doing a Sangiovese rosé, and so is Iron Horse. There are a number of others. I think it's a very good use for Sangiovese.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
And that's what, when you have so many red grapes and the market may or not be as big as you want with the wine, you have to find some other use for it. So rosé is another product line, and a whole other dimension of how you can use it and promoting them that way.
Absolutely. Now, this one would retail for $17.
Yes.
Average retail. You know what I'm going to do? Mouthful has a Facebook page. I think what I will do is once that this is posted on iTunes and KRCB.org so that you can download the show, I will do a note or an end, however I can do it with enough words. I will put a list of all of the wines that we've tasted today along with the websites so that people can find them. These are really some lovely wines.
Thank you.
Really, really lovely wines. Now, what about, before we get to the last wine that we can taste, what about people who are going, you know, to visit relatives, going on vacation, visiting the East Coast? What is it like? Pretty open to visitors?
Yes. Almost all of your wineries will sell their wines right at their cellar door. And that's the way majority of the wineries sell their wine. So many of them are open 7 days a week. Others are 5 days a week or weekends only. Winter, they're closed a little bit more, but many wineries are open year-round.
And in a lot of the areas, the wineries have gathered together and made these wine trails. You know, you have several in Virginia. You have in New York. You have along in Connecticut. So there's if you hit the website for the state and you pop up the you know, the wineries list categories, you'll see these wine trails. It will assist you as a tourist to go.
You know, I know when I was on Long Island, the North Fork of Long Island, late last summer, they promote their wines really well. I mean, everywhere I went, people were saying, oh, you have to go to the wine. And I was like, I'm from California. Leave me alone. I want to go to a bookstore. I don't want to go to a winery.
But
I just I was there for a very short time, I should say.
But so. I think we've got, Dave, we have at least four, don't we, in Virginia that are wine
trails? More than that, more than wine trails.
Right.
Which are just groupings of wineries who will do publication, a map of their locality. In the state, we have a whole map showing the locations of all the wineries. And the wine trails do some other things with some special events.
I was going to ask about that. Do you have special events that go?
Lake Seneca up in New York, they have the wine trails too, and before Christmas they have an event. You pay, I forget, a nominal amount of money and you get your card stamped at more than one. And getting a Christmas ornament at each one that they've made
too. That's fun.
They have a similar thing in the Yadkin Valley down in North Carolina, just north of Winston-Salem. Mm-hmm. It's a big area there for the growth in the wine industry and the grapes.
Now, I know I'm going to ask a question that you may not be able to answer. No problem. It's outside your area. But what is Mississippi doing?
Growing grapes, but most of them are muscadine.
Okay,
but some of the French hybrids, but again,
right. And it makes...
Weather is warmer, so that's what grows. But again, I think they're also trying to grow some of those grapes that University of Florida have developed.
Okay.
And expanding there. But again, you have the hotter, more humid weather, right. So you need grapes that will actually grow and not perish. In those
Do we know how many wineries there are in Mississippi?
I think a half a dozen.
Half a dozen?
Or less.
Okay.
Yeah.
I ask partly because my younger daughter lives in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always trying to find interesting things to tell her about. Because I send them wine.
Exactly.
Okay, so we have one more wine to taste.
And this is actually from North Carolina, but it's a different kind of wine. It's called Catawba Bell, which is the proprietor's name, but it's made
Catawba
of two different
Bell.
Grapes.
Okay.
Catawba is 80% Catawba, which is a Native American grape. It was found in North Carolina in the early 1800s and grows a lot in New York and elsewhere. And it's one of a lot of the sparkling wines done in New York. But they made this here at Catawba Bell. And 20% Magnolia. Magnolia is a Vitis rotundifolia, which is a
miscadine. Is that rotundifolia?
Rotundifolia, because it's big, round leaves. That's what the Vitis is named for. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, too, Vitis rotundifolia is not like anything you've seen as a grape, where you think of a grape as harvesting, you have bunches to harvest. Rotundifolia grows big berries, big individual berries.
About what size?
Bigger than about a half dollar size.
Really?
That's
individual
berries. Individual berries.
Wow.
So you can say all of rotundifolia is almost like a Trockenberry now, Slicer, because they're all berry harvested.
The interesting thing about this winery, Michelle, is that Jack and Grace Bishop were real estate developers, and they bought about 300 acres in this area with the intent of doing a development. Housing development, but it got so beautiful for them. They said, "We can't do that. We can't destroy this beauty down here. So let's build a winery." And so they built a winery. It's on the Albemarle Sound. Yeah.
So tell us. Tell me again where it is.
It's
the Sound.
The Albemarle Sound. It's down. It's the northern part, northeastern part of North Carolina.
Okay.
Just south of the Virginia border.
Now, this is
Columbia, North Carolina.
This is very pale, probably the least color of any of the wines.
Well, Catawba.
It's delicate and beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And Catawba is that, as I say, a Native American hybrid kind of thing. It's not a hybrid, but it is a Native American grape, but a cross.
A cross between?
I don't know the parents.
Okay.
But in fact, I don't think anyone does. They have not done DNA testing, but it was sort of found as a specific varietal. Uh-huh. In the late 1800s in North Carolina. And then they found it was very successful, growing a lot in New York, but again, back in North Carolina, as this is. But again, being landed Labrusco, you have a little bit of that foxiness, which is like a Concord, more delicate Concord foxiness. Mm-hmm. And the Magnolia giving you some muscat. It's a muscadine, so you get a little muskiness, but still, I think it's well controlled.
Mm. Muskiness, there's a lot of sweetness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not overly sweet, though.
Not overly, but there's something else. What is this?
Yeah. A lot of times.
That's probably the rotundifolia. That's probably the magnolia in there.
Well, there's a bunch of citrus, some ruby grapefruit, but still there's something else that I'll think of at like 3 this morning.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
What do you think this would go well with, Michelle?
What do I think this would go well with? Apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
This would go really well. And, actually, it's been a long time, but when I'm feeling really ambitious, saute apples in butter, boil down a combination of apple juice and apple cider vinegar, swirl a little, and black pepper, those three things, swirl a little butter into it just after, and then have a really hot, dry frying pan. And sear very quickly slices of foie gras.
Marvelous.
And serve the foie gras on top of the sliced apples and spoon on some of that apple cider vinegar and black pepper sauce. This would be a perfect wine with that.
Are you making this after the show? We have the wine.
Oh, if somebody hurries over with a foie gras, we can do it. But no, that would be fabulous with this wine.
I agree. Yes. So it's but you have the variety of the different rosés, and even because it is a Native American grape or whatever, people sort of thumb their nose because they're all sweet. Well, that makes it a little more palatable, and you get some dryness in there, but also some sweetness in different styles.
But so not overly sweet. This is one of those good examples. This,
is really sweet, but immediately foie gras.
Yes,
I mean that's the one time that I really want some sweetness on the wine.
A classic combination is the Sauternes with foie gras.
Yes, exactly, Sauternes. And you know, if you don't want to pay $300 a glass, this is a really $12.99 for the bottle. But no, this is they should promote this as the perfect foie gras wine because it's absolutely perfect for it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Annie, what would you serve with this?
I think this would really go well with some seafood also. I think that if a seafood had a butter-based sauce.
Maybe some scallops.
Yes.
Because they have a lot of nice sweetness.
Right. And then the acid in the wine would cut through the fat of the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'd be a good seafood wine also.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Annie, do you have what are your classes coming up at the JC? Anything?
Oh, I have Italian 6 coming up the end of February.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really excited about that.
How many weeks is that class?
8 weeks. One night a week.
Uh-huh.
And then I have my wine class coming up, wine service and hospitality, 8-week course, and we meet once a week at the Schoen Farm in Forestville.
Oh, the Schoen Farm is just such a great venue. I love that place.
And great cooking facility. Beautiful, beautiful kitchen. A great place to have a class.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'm going to taste this again.
Back to the wines.
Back to the wine. But there's just this one quality that I really want to find. Do you drink much wine? I'm asking Eric. Asking Eric, who is engineering lately for Mouthful. Want to try it?
Sure.
I'm not sick.
Just needing to sneeze.
And you don't have cooties or anything, do you?
Nope, I have no cooties. Certified cootie free.
That's good.
It's interesting. Now, you've been living in Israel.
Yeah.
Do you drink Israeli wines?
The truth is, this is going to go over with this crowd here. I really don't drink much wine.
Okay. But you're doing Mouthful now, so you probably will.
Right.
Okay, that's all right. Mm-hmm. And we'll have somebody on to talk about Israeli wine at some point.
Yeah.
If people want more information about Atlantic Seaboard wines, let's talk about some of the best ways for them to get it.
Well, each state has their own website and promotion there. Individual
wineries.
Do you mean
like California?
Well, Virginia Wine.
CA.gov.
VirginiaWines.com.
Oh, Virginia Wines. Okay.
Mm-hmm. New York, I think it might be Uncork New York or New York Wines. Or Google does wines in the East Coast, and you can find some things. There's a lot of different websites out there, too. And I think we have some links on ours. Our website.
We're trying to put some links on our site.
We are redoing our website. So right now it's there, but under construction. So we'll have some more on there.
Our website is www.vwga.org. And VWGA stands for, we were the Vinifera Wine Growers Association before we changed our name to Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association back a couple of years ago to more reflect a regional approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because our birthplace is in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. So when do you expect the redesign?
Within a month.
Oh, within a month. Yes. Okay, so people can go there, and then from there they'll have.
We hope to have some links.
We'll hook some links up.
Okay. And then tell us what is the website going to entail? Will you have
It'll show
ways to buy.
No, not place to buy. We're a trade organization. We do promotion. But we don't get involved in the retail aspect of things. But we do a festival in Virginia every year, so there'll be information on that.
When is that?
That's in September every year. It's the second largest
in Virginia.
It's been going on for 33 years.
Oh, tell us about that.
It's a way to promote Virginia wines. As Dave has said earlier, we're kind of scattered throughout the states. We have it in the Centerville area, which is up in northern Virginia, an opportunity to for the large population area in northern Virginia to taste wines from over 55 wineries that will come into the festival grounds. And we do a two-day festival. I think it's the 18th and 19th of September.
Second or third weekend, I believe. It's the third weekend.
And So that's an opportunity there for them to taste the wineries from the southern part of the state, which are too far to drive to, and this mm-hmm. kind of thing. So it's a great opportunity. We normally get about 10,000 people on Saturday and about 6,000 people on Sunday for that kind of over the two-day thing.
Now, one thing I realize I don't know, there's so much talk about shipping. You know, the problems of shipping, mm-hmm. and can California ship to there? And I realize, can wineries ship to California?
It's the receiving state that puts the laws in place.
Right. So what are
into California? Laws? Many wineries can ship, but I believe in California you have to ship to a central warehouse and
you
then
do?
Reship. At least we don't. We're a small winery, mm-hmm. so we don't. And the receiving states basically need a license to ship to those states. We don't have a specific license for each state because it's cost prohibitive, but we have Vino Shipper, which is a California firm that doesn't allow us to ship directly to California residents, but ships to the Vino Shipper warehouse, and then that reships to the resident itself.
Oh, okay.
So it's a double shipping payment, but that's right. The California state law.
That's interesting. I just realized I can't believe I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. It's, well, every law, every state after 1933 when the 21st Amendment was appealed, the second mm-hmm. clause in it was states regulate your alcohol.
Yes, and I know that things are working their way through various courts.
We have 50 different levels of regulation because of 50 different states, and we're trying to get a little more homogenized as lobbying and the structure to make it more easier for people to get wine.
And on that note, I have to say thank you, first of all, to Annie Vercelli. Thank you, Annie, for always thinking of me when your pals are here. It's always really interesting. And to Dave Barber of Heartwood Winery, also Vice President of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, and also Carl Brenthorst, President of the organization. Thank you so much for being here. So it's great. Next, what should we do next year?
What would you like, yes.
Maybe we should do the winners of the
we can bring some of them.
Let's do the winners.
Okay.
The
variety pack. We'll bring six winners.
Half white and half red?
Sure.
We'll just see
but
what
we
the competition
probably do,
shows.
We could probably do eight or nine. Let's do nine.
Okay.
Let's do
nine is fine.
Nine's a good number. And on that note, meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour here on KRCB. Have a great week.
Dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said.
Mouthful is hosted and produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast at krcb.org or from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing to the Lord.